thousands of small golden bells hanging around its sides. The Rakshasas were struck with wonder to see Ravana mounted on the chariot, which shone like the sun. The charioteer urged on the eight celestial steeds, and the chariot sped along Lanka's central highway. Right behind him came the last of his generals, Mahaparshva, Virupaksha, and Surantaka. Following them were the remainder of the Rakshasa forces, 300,000 elephants, 100,000 chariots, 600,000 horsemen, and the same number of infantry. Ravana led his force through Lanka's northern gate, and they rushed toward Ram's army, sending up loud shouts. Even as Ravana charged, the sun became dim and the four quarters were enveloped in gloom. Birds shrieked hideously and the earth shook. Clouds rained blood and a meteor fell from the sky with a crash. Ravana felt his left eye twitching and his face became pale. A large vulture perched upon his standard and crows encircled him above. Not minding these fearful omens, Ravana cheered madly toward the massed ranks of the monkey army. He plunged into them, immediately creating havoc. With arrows decked with gold, he severed the heads of thousands of monkeys. Others were pierced in the heart, and still others had their limbs lopped off. Some were crushed by his chariot, and some smashed by his mace. Wherever his chariot moved, the monkeys could not stand and face him. An irresistible hail of arrows flew in all directions from Ravana's chariot. He was as hard to approach as the scorching sun. Soon the battlefield was strewn with the corpses of slain monkeys. As Ravana plowed into the Vanara forces, they fled, tortured by his weapons. The demon king dispersed the simian ranks like the wind dispersing clouds. Having cut through the monkeys, Ravana searched for Ram. Sugriv became maddened upon seeing the destruction of his army. He threw himself into the battle and began annihilating the Rakshasas on all sides. Roaring at a high pitch, the Vanara king rushed at the Rakshasas, whirling a massive tree. He killed them even as the wind of destruction would knock down trees at the end of an age. Sugriv hurled upon the Rakshasas a formidable number of huge rocks in rapid succession, like a shower of hailstones falling upon a flock of birds. The Rakshasas fell by the hundreds, their heads smashed. They appeared like so many crumbling mountains hit by thunderbolts. Virupaksha leapt down from his chariot and challenged Sugriv. He shot 100 fierce arrows at the monkey. The Rakshasa then mounted upon a great elephant and roared. Sugriv turned toward the demon and seized hold of a huge tree. He bounded into the air and brought the tree down upon the elephant's head. The colossal beast staggered backward and sank to its knees. Virupaksha leapt down and took out his sword. He rushed at Sugriv, who hurled a heavy crag at the demon. Dodging the rock, Virupaksha bounded forward and struck Sugriv a terrible blow with his sword. The monkey flew back and fell to the ground, breathing heavily. Coming back to his senses, after some moments, Sugriv sprang up and aimed a blow at the Rakshasa with his fist. Virupaksha avoided the blow and again struck the monkey on the chest. Sugriv, blazing with anger, swung his hand with the speed of the wind. He struck the Rakshasa on his temple with the force of Indra's thunderbolt. Virupaksha dropped to the ground with blood streaming from his mouth, nose, eyes, and ears. He tossed about, bellowing in pain. Losing consciousness, the Rakshasa gave up his life. Headed by Ram and Lakshman, the chief monkeys fought in a frenzy. Sugriv, Angada, Hanuman, and other principal Vanaras cut down the Rakshasa forces like a field of ripe wheat. The demon king Ravana agonized at seeing his army overwhelmed. He turned to Mahaparshva and said, "O heroic one, my hopes now rest with you. Repay your debt to your master and destroy this hostile army of monkeys. Do not delay." The Rakshasa folded his palms and bowed slightly to Ravana. Raising his mighty bow, he rushed into the Vanara forces like a moth entering a flame. Endowed with extraordinary strength, he carved a path through the monkeys with his blazing arrows. With deadly accuracy, he severed the arms, legs, and heads of the monkeys, sending up his fearful war cry. Struck hard and reeling from Mahaparshva's attack, the monkeys ran to Sugriv for protection. The monkey king rushed at the Rakshasa and hurled a tremendous crag straight at his chariot. Mahaparshva saw the rock flying at him, and unperturbed, released swift arrows that broke it to pieces. Shattered into 1,000 fragments by a stream of arrows, the rock descended to the ground like a flock of vultures. Sugriv immediately tore up a tree and threw it at the demon with all his strength. Again, Mahaparshva fired arrows which sliced the tree into pieces. Sugriv then picked up an iron bludgeon that lay on the ground nearby. He leapt forward and killed the team of horses yoked to the demon's chariot. The Rakshasa jumped down, clutching his dreadful mace. He hurled the spike mace at Sugriv, and the monkey struck it with his bludgeon. With a great explosion, the two weapons shattered and fell to the ground. The two heroes fell upon each other and wrestled for some time. They struck each other with their fists, knees, and heads, roaring and rolling about on the ground. Sugriv lifted the Rakshasa and threw him to a distance. Getting up at once, Mahaparshva took hold of a sword and shield and rushed at Sugriv. The monkey quickly looked around and found another sword. With upraised weapons, the two powerful combatants met together, shouting in joy. A fierce sword fight ensued, creating a shower of sparks as the weapons clashed together. Suddenly, Mahaparshva brought down his sword with full force onto Sugriv's shoulder. It embedded itself into the monkey's armor. As the Rakshasa tried to extract it, Sugriv quickly swung his own weapon in a short arc and severed the demon's head from his shoulders. As the gods and Siddhas looked on, the Rakshasa fell lifeless to the ground. His head rolled away with its teeth clenched and its golden earrings glittering. Sugriv stood with his blood-soaked sword, looking like a dark cloud graced by a bright sunbeam. The monkeys, overjoyed, cheered their leader and thronged around him. The Rakshasas fled toward Ravana, howling in fear. In the meantime, the other powerful Rakshasa commander, Sarantaka, had been slain in a duel with Angada. Now Ravana alone remained among the great Rakshasa heroes. He was consumed by rage. Looking around at his devastated army, he saw Ram and Lakshman fighting in the distance. The demon ordered his charioteer to go toward the princes. As his chariot moved across the earth, it gave off a sound like a rumbling of 1,000 thundering clouds. The ground shook and the monkeys fled simply from hearing the terrifying sound. The demon king took out a brilliant arrow and placed it on his bow. He then invoked a missile presided over by Rahu, a malevolent and powerful enemy of the gods. Ravana released the fearful weapon, which then annihilated the monkeys by the hundreds of thousands. Blazing steel shafts sped in all directions, dispersing Ram's army as the sun disperses a morning mist. None dared face the Rakshasa king as he rushed toward Ram. Seeing the demon approach like an onrushing comet, Lakshman sped innumerable arrows toward him. Those arrows could hardly be seen as they screamed through the air, but the demon displayed astonishing dexterity and cut them all down. Ravana went straight past Lakshman and approached Ram. He loosed a shower of arrows on Ram, which were like venomous serpents with flaming heads. Ram stood on the battlefield like an immovable mountain. He immediately countered Ravana's arrows with crescent-headed shafts that cut them to pieces. Ravana continued to send volleys of arrows at Ram, and the prince replied with equal numbers of his own. The sky was filled with arrows resembling flocks of golden birds. Ram and the demon circled each other from left to right, each fixing his gaze on the other. They appeared like death personified and Yamaraj himself meeting for a violent encounter. They completely covered the sky with their arrows and caused a shadow to envelop the battlefield. Both kept their bows bent to a full circle and both moved with great speed, keeping their weapons trained on each other. Hare Krishna. Ram's blazing golden armor deflected Ravana's shafts, while the demon's impenetrable mail rendered Ram's arrows ineffective. Seeing his arrows falling uselessly to the ground, Ravana sent a dozen fierce shafts, which pierced Ram's arrow. With those golden arrows protruding from his head and producing profuse blood, Ram appeared to be wearing a shining crown decorated with a red garland. Impervious to the pain, Ram invoked the Rudrastra presided over by Shiva. and sent a fearful hail of flaming arrows at the demon. They struck Ravana on every part of his body, seeking out his vulnerable points, and the demon's celestial armor again repelled. But the demon's celestial armor again repelled the shafts, and they entered the earth, hissing like furious snakes. Ravana then invoked the fearful Rakshasa weapon, imbuing it with his own enormous personal power. As he released it, all kinds of strange missiles sped towards Ram. Some had heads of terrible lions with wide-open mouths, and others had the heads of wolves, jackals, donkeys, boars, dogs, alligators, and venomous serpents. Ravana's mystic weapon produced a frightening and discordant sound. It assailed Ram from every side. Unshaken, Ram moved with great agility and dodged the shafts as they fell. He dropped to one knee and took out a blazing golden arrow. Fitting it to his bow, he invoked the Agnyastra. With that weapon, he produced arrows of every description. Some resembled the radiant sun, others the moon, and others appeared like blazing meteors. Some flew like flashes of lightning, and some were flaming crescents. Others rose into the sky like shining planets, descending to the earth like brilliant constellations fallen from heaven. Those divine arrows struck down all Ravana's missiles, which were killing the monkeys all over the battlefield. Ravana blazed up in anger as he saw his wonderful weapon neutralized. He took out another dreadful missile, which had been fashioned by Maya, the architect of the celestial demons known as Asuras. Ravana charged the weapon with the potency of Rudra and fired it into the sky. At once there dropped from all sides innumerable flaming pikes and maces, along with massive iron clubs. Mystical nooses and thunderbolts fell upon the monkey army, accompanied by a piercing gale, like the wind which blows at the end of an age. That demoniac weapon began to annihilate the monkeys. A vast number of blazing missiles directed themselves at Ram, who responded by invoking the Gandharva weapon. Immediately, countless arrows swept like a sheet across the entire battlefield. Without striking any of the monkeys, the arrows struck and disabled Ravana's missiles. All of them were cut to pieces, and they fell to the earth. Without a second's delay, Ravana employed the Suryastra. It brought into being a stream of large, brilliant discuses, which flew from Ravana's bow. As they rose into view, they lit up all directions as if 100 suns had risen on the battlefield. Ram stood firm and pierced every one of the discuses with his own shafts, charging them with a force equal to that of Ravana's weapon. They split apart the flaming missiles and rendered them harmless as soon as they left Ravana's bow. As Ram countered his missile, Ravana sent 10 barbed arrows which pierced the prince all over his body. Enraged, Ram instantly responded with 100 of his own arrows, which thudded deeply into Ravana's limbs. Lakshman then came forward and challenged the demon. Raising his bow, he sped a number of shafts at Ravana that cut to pieces the demon's standard, which bore the emblem of a man's head. With a single crescent-headed arrow, Lakshman severed the head of Ravana's charioteer. Then, with 5 more well-aimed arrows, he broke apart the Rakshasa's gleaming bow. At the same time, Bibhishan leapt forward and struck down with his mace the demon's steeds, which were as tall as hills. Ravana quickly leapt from his chariot and gazed at his younger brother with flaming eyes. He hurled a blazing lance at Bibhishan, which looked like a thunderbolt. But as it flew toward Bibhishan, Lakshman cut it to pieces with 3 razor-headed arrows. That golden lance, which was bedecked with jewels, fell to the earth like a shower of meteors. Ravana took up another lance, even more terrible than the first. It shone with a lurid glow and emitted bright blue tongues of fire. Ravana raised his lance and fixed his gaze on Bibhishan. Lakshman saw his friend in danger and covered the demon king with countless shafts. Ravana was stunned by the ferocity of Lakshman's arrows, and he turned to face the prince. He shouted out in anger, "You have saved Bibhishan, but now you are yourself in grave danger. O proud one, stand ready. This lance made by Maya Danava for the destruction of the gods will pierce your heart, leaving your body only after taking your life." Ravana leveled his fallible lance at Lakshman. It was adorned with 8 golden bells and gave off a loud chiming as the demon pulled it back. With his bludgeon-like arm, Ravan hurled the lance with full force. It sped through the air, cracking like thunder, and spread a shower of brilliant sparks in its wake. Seeing it approach, Lakshman uttered an imprecation. May you prove ineffectual. May your attempt to take my life fail. May all be well with Lakshman. As the prince spoke, the lance struck him full in the chest. Grievously hurt by the weapon, Lakshman collapsed unconscious to the ground. Ram was seized with sorrow to see his brother reduced to that state. His eyes filled with tears and his mouth became parched and dry. As furious as the all-devouring fire of universal destruction, he glared at the demon. Ram ran over to his brother. The lance had pierced his armor and stuck into his body. Ram carefully extracted the lance and snapped it in two. He gently lifted Lakshman and embraced him. As he held the grievously wounded prince, Ravana shot serpent-like arrows at him. Without caring for the arrows, Ram called to Hanuman and Sugriv, "Guard this prince carefully. The time has come for me to manifest my strength. I shall make short work of this 10-headed monster. Here is my unfailing promise. The world will soon be devoid of either Ravana or myself. Let the 3 worlds witness my power today in battle. I shall achieve a feat which will be spoken of by all beings for as long as the world exists." Victory to Ram! Ram stood up and immediately released an endless stream of ferocious shafts at Ravana. Greatly harassed, the demon replied with a shower of flaming steel arrows and iron clubs. Ram countered Ravana's missiles as they sped through the air, striking each and every one of them down. He fought wildly, sending screaming arrows that struck Ravana on every part of his body. The demon fell back as Ram closed on him. He was entirely covered by Ram's golden-plumed shafts. Ravana could hardly do anything in response as Ram unleashed his fury. Completely overwhelmed, the Rakshasa turned and looked and took to his heels. Chapter 13. The Final Battle. As Ravana retreated in fear, Ram went back to Lakshman. He dropped down by his side and cradled the prince's head in his hands. Lakshman seemed dead. The wound in his chest looked terrible, and Lakshman did not appear to be breathing. Choked by tears, Ram spoke aloud, giving vent to his grief. "Oh, how painful it is to see my beloved brother in such a state. My strength is deserting me as I look upon him lying here. Even if I win this fight, I will feel no joy at all without Lakshman. Indeed, this prince has followed me through thick and thin. If he has now departed for the regions of death, then I too shall follow him." Ram lamented loudly for some time. What would he say to Sumitra if he returned without Lakshman? How could he face Bharat and Shatrughna? Surely they would censure him for failing to protect his younger brother. It would be better to give up his own life than hear the reproaches of those most dear to him. Ram fell weeping to the ground. Hanuman raised him up and comforted him. He called for Shushena, the Vanara physician. Perhaps Lakshman would respond to his treatment of celestial herbs. Shushena approached the fallen prince and examined him carefully. He looked up at Ram and said, "Your brother still lives. See how his bodily luster has not departed. And I can detect the movement of his air and the beat of his heart, but he needs urgent treatment." Shushena asked for more of the celestial herbs which Hanuman had fetched from the Himalaya. The herbs were brought quickly, and Shushena administered them to Lakshman. By the divine power of the herb Sanji Vakarani, the prince slowly returned to consciousness. Then Shushena carefully administered the herbs Vishalyakarani and Sandhani, which together healed Lakshman's grievous wound and repaired his bones. Slowly he sat up and looked around. Ram was overjoyed. He pressed Lakshman to his bosom with tears in his eyes and said, "By good fortune you have been saved from the jaws of death. If you had died, I would not have been able to carry out this fight." Lakshman, pained to hear his brother speak in this way, replied, "You have taken a solemn vow to kill Ravana and install Bibhishan. on the throne of Lanka. You should not make this that false for any reason. O great hero, fulfill your vow at once. Let us see the evil Ravana lying dead on the battlefield, cut down by your arrows. Ram seized his bow. A terrible anger took hold of him. Lakshman had spoken well. The time for the arrogant demon's destruction had arrived. As Ram looked around, he saw Ravana seated aboard his golden chariot. Having rested, the demon was again rushing at Ram as the malefic planet Rahu rushes toward the sun. From where he stood, Ram immediately shot a steady stream of arrows that shone like fire. They rained down upon the demon, who, in turn, loosed off torrents of shafts that hissed like serpents as they flew at Ram. From the sky, the gods observed the combat. Seeing Ram standing upon the ground, Indra desired to assist him. He summoned Muttali, his charioteer, and asked him to fetch his chariot. In a moment, Indra's radiant chariot appeared, drawn by its 1,000 steeds. Indra ordered Muttali to take it to Ram, and the charioteer at once descended onto the battlefield next to the prince. With folded palms, he respectfully addressed Ram. Here is my lord Indra's chariot, O Raghava. Here also is his mighty bow and other infallible weapons, as well as his invincible golden armor. Please use all these to attain victory over Ravana, the enemy of the gods. I shall act as your charioteer. Ram gazed with amazement at the wonderful vehicle. It was bedecked with glowing gems and wreaths of celestial flowers. A tall pole of cat's eyes stood in its center, bearing a brilliant golden standard. The chariot was suspended and a bow length above the ground, and a crystal staircase came down to Ram's feet. He circumambulated the chariot and then climbed aboard. The prince quickly donned Indra's armor and took up his bow and celestial arrows. As he stood upon the divine chariot, he looked like the sun illumining all the quarters. At Matali's command, the heavenly steeds surged forward, and the chariot moved off with a rumbling sound that filled the earth and sky. Ravana, realizing that Ram was being assisted by his mortal enemy Indra, became even more enraged. He fired a celestial missile, which unleashed hundreds of thousands of dreadful-looking serpents, their wide-open mouths vomiting fire. Writhing and hissing, they came from all sides and sped toward Ram. As the venomous snakes descended upon him, Ram at once invoked a weapon presided over by Garuda. A shower of arrows shot from his bow, turning as they flew into golden eagles with fierce talons and sharply curved beaks. The mystical eagles intercepted and destroyed all of Ravana's serpents. The demon roared furiously. He struck Muttali and all his steeds with a forcible torrent of shafts with glowing steel heads. The Rakshasa then sent a crescent-headed arrow which tore down the chariot's golden standard. He followed this with countless other straight-flying arrows that struck Ram on every part of his body. In seconds, Indra's great chariot was completely covered by Ravana's arrows so that no part of it was visible. With his 10 heads and massive bow, Ravana stood in his chariot looking like the Mainika mountain risen from the ocean. Observing the demon overwhelming Ram with his arrows, the gods and rishis felt despondent. The monkeys became fearful and they observed grim-looking omens. The sun became dim and the sea tossed with waves that seemed to rise up to the sky. Jackals howled, and ghosts and wraiths darted about on the battlefield. So intense was Ravana's assault that Ram was unable to lift his bow and fit his arrows. Ram's eyes turned crimson with rage. He began to think of the destruction of the entire Rakshasa race. With great expertise, Muttali drove the chariot upward towards... I'm waiting until 7:30. Thank you. With great expertise, Muttali drove the chariot upward and away from the hail of Ravana's arrows. It burst forth like the sun emerging from a cloud. The gods showered blessings on Ram, while the Daityas and Danavas uttered benedictions upon Ravana. When the king of the Rakshasas saw his adversary again stationed before him, he took up a fearful-looking dart. That terrific weapon, had spikes resembling mountain peaks. It had a flaming point which glowed with a brilliance that could not be looked upon. The dart was dear to Ravana and had been carefully kept and worshipped by him, reserved for a time when he faced a deadly enemy. It was irresistible to gods and demons alike. Ravana raised it with his serpent-like arm and roared with full force. The earth shook and the mountains trembled, sending their lions and elephants fleeing in fear. Looking at Ram, the Rakshasa thundered, "This dart, powerful like a thunderbolt, will now take your life. Hurled by me, it will strike both you and your brother, leveling you with all Rakshasas you have slain. Guard yourself if you can." The demon at once threw the dart. It flashed through the air, covered by a circle of lightning and emitting a deafening scream. Ram instantly sent 100 arrows at the dart, but they were deflected and fell useless to the ground. Without losing a moment, Ram took up Indra's celestial javelin. He forcefully hurled it, and it flew like blazing meteor straight at the dart. Struck by the divine lance, Ravana's weapon was split apart and dropped to the earth. The javelin, giving off a delightful sound from the many bells tied around it, returned again to Indra's chariot. Ram immediately followed that astonishing feat by sending a fierce volley of arrows at the demon. They struck Ravana in all his limbs and pierced his 10 heads. The demon blazed with anger and replied with an equal number of his own arrows. Ram intercepted Ravana's arrows while simultaneously continuing to strike him. The Rakshasa then released an even greater number of shafts, which penetrated Ram's defense and pierced through his armor. With blood shining on his breast, Ram looked like a great kinshuk tree in full blossom. Neither opponent could easily see the other, so great was the number of arrows filling the air. Ram pulled clear of Ravana's attack and laughed heartily. He rebuked the demon. "You are proud of your strength, O Rakshasa, but it will not save you now. Indeed, since you stole away my consort while I was not present, you cannot be considered heroic. You are a shameless coward given over to vanity alone, vaunting yourself as a hero. Had you tried taking Sita from my presence, you would not be alive today. By good fortune, I see you now on the battlefield. Prepare to receive the results of your despicable and evil acts. O vile one, carnivorous birds and beasts will soon feast upon your flesh and blood." With redoubled strength, Ram sent wave upon wave of arrows straight at Ravana. The prince felt increased enthusiasm for the fight. He invoked all the celestial missiles, and they immediately appeared before him on the battlefield. In great joy, Ram fired the weapons at the demon one after another. He recited the incantations with full concentration as he released his arrows. Charged with the mystic power of the divine astras, the arrows tore into Ravana and sent him reeling. As he staggered about on his chariot, the Rakshasa was showered with rocks and trees by the monkeys. The demon was reduced to a sorry plight. Being unable to lift his bow or do anything in his defense, he sank down on the floor of his chariot. Seeing this, the charioteer veered away from the fight and retreated. Ravana remained stunned for some time. Gradually returning to his senses, he saw that his charioteer had taken him away from the battlefield. He immediately chastised the charioteer with harsh words. "How have you disdained me in this way, O evil-minded one? Obviously, considering me to be bereft of power, heroism, and prowess, you have covered me with shame. Today you have nullified my valor, dignity, and fame, while my enemy stood expectantly waiting before me, deserving to be gratified by my arrows. You have made me into a coward." Ravana was beside himself with fury. He accused the charioteer of siding with the enemy and ordered him to return immediately to Ram's presence. The charioteer replied that he had only done what he felt was his proper duty. Ravana had been completely overpowered by Ram's weapons. Out of affection, he had desired to save his master's life. Citing verses from scripture supporting his action, the charioteer begged Ram's forgiveness. The demon king was appeased. He nodded at his charioteer and commanded him to return with all speed to the fight. Urged on by Ravana, the charioteer lashed his horses, and within a few moments, the chariot started again before Ram. On the battlefield, Ram was himself expressing his exhaustion from the fight. In the heavens, the great Rishi Agastya saw this and desired to assist him. Agastya had been observing the battle from the sky along with the gods. He now descended to Ram's chariot and spoke to him. O mighty armed Ram, please listen as I tell you the secret of a highly confidential prayer, the Aditi Hridaya. This prayer will invoke the powerful spiritual energy from the heart of the sun. This is the very effulgence of the Supreme Vishnu himself. With this power, one can overcome any obstacle and destroy to the roots all of one's enemies. Agastya instructed Ram how to recite the prayer, which would summon the combined power of all the gods emanating from the bodily rays of Vishnu. With that power, Ram would be able to quickly overcome Ravana before nightfall, when the demon's own power would be doubled. The Rishi returned to the heavens and Ram turned toward the sun. After sipping water for purification, he recited the Aditya Hridaya. At once he felt extreme happiness and his mind became highly enlivened. All his fatigue vanished and he took up his bow. He stood firmly on Indra's chariot, fixing his gaze upon Ravana, who had again appeared before him. He urged Muttali forward toward the demon. In the heavens, the sun god stood in person amid the other gods and uttered benedictions upon Ram, saying, "May victory attend you!" Ram saw Ravana's chariot flying toward him, filling all quarters with its thunderous rumbling. The chariot was drawn by huge black steeds with heads of hideous fiends. It shone with a dreadful luster and was adorned all over with brilliant rubies and celestial sapphires, with rows of pennants flying from its sides. Moving rapidly through space, it looked like a cloud containing streams of shining water and issuing forth torrents in the forms of arrows. Ram said to Muttali, "From the way in which he is darting back into the fray, it appears that this Rakshas is bent on upon his own destruction. Close upon him with care, I shall destroy his chariot, even as the wind would blow away a cloud." Grasping Indra's bow, Ram tempered his anger with patience as he awaited the opportunity to attack the demon, who was maneuvering on the battlefield. Muttali skillfully drove the chariot in circles and gradually closed on Ravana. The two opponents releasing streams of arrows and appearing like proud lions intent on killing each other. Suddenly, many frightful omens appeared. Blood rained down on Ravana's chariot while violent whirlwinds tossed it about. A flock of vultures circled over the demon. In the distance, Lanka was shrouded in a red glow. Great meteors fell from the sky and the earth shook. The sky became darkened even while the sun shone. Terrible thunderbolts and flashes of lightning fell upon the Rakshasa army. Ravana's steeds shot hot tears and emitted sparks from their mouths. Around Ram were seen many favorable signs that portended his imminent victory. The sun illuminated him brilliantly, and a gentle breeze blew behind him. He felt his right eye and arm throb, and his mind felt joyful. As Ram and Ravana met in fearful combat, the two armies stood motionless with their weapons held fast in their hands. Observing the man and demon engaged in a desperate duel, all the warriors along with the gods, Gandharvas and Rishis, watched in wonderment. The two belligerent opponents each exhibited their full prowess on the battlefield as they hurled blazing weapons at each other. Ram fitted a highly sharpened shaft to his bow, as irresistible as a thunderbolt and shining with splendor. Drawing back his bow to a full circle, he released the arrow at Ravana's standard. It severed the tall pole, and the demon's ensign fluttered to the ground. Ravana burned with indignation. He sent a hail of flaming steel arrows at Ram's steeds. Struck by the arrows, the celestial horses neither flinched nor shook, but continued to draw the great chariot, describing various circles and movements and baffling Ravana's arrows. The demon fired a tremendous shower of maces, iron clubs, discuses, and mallets, as well as mountain peaks, trees, pikes, and double-headed axes. At the same time, he released tremendous volleys of arrows which fell toward Ram's chariot like streaks of golden lightning. By Muttali's expert handling, Indra's chariot constantly foiled Ravana's weapons. The Rakshasa became more and more infuriated as he directed his mystic whip missiles upon the army of monkeys. Seeing this, Ram fitted celestial weapons to his bow, which sent innumerable arrows into the sky. Those arrows fell upon Ram and his weapons and smashed them to pieces. No arrow shot by Ram failed to find its mark. The sky was completely filled with its golden plumed shafts. The missiles of the two fighters met together in hundreds of thousands. They created explosions of fire and billows of smoke across the whole battlefield. Ram and Ravana fought vehemently for hours without interruption. Exchanging blow for blow, neither felt wearied nor inclined to give an inch to the other. Those observing the fight felt their hairs standing on end. No one could take their eyes off the furious fighters as they battled on, relentlessly seeking victory. Ravana sent 20, then 60, then 100, and then 1,000 arrows at Ram, aiming at his vital parts, or seeking to kill the charioteer and his horses. Ram responded with twice that number, digging shafts into Ravana's steeds and charioteer, while at the same time constantly covering the demon. Even after fighting for half a day, neither seemed to have the upper hand. Ravana then composed himself and once again invoked the Rakshasa Astra, imbuing it with all his mystic potency. Immediately the air was filled with a thick shower of every kind of weapon. The entire globe seemed to shake, and the ocean became agitated. Serpents and devils appeared, screaming in the sky and emitting fire from their mouths. The sun lost its brilliance, and the wind ceased to blow. In the heavens, the gods themselves became fearful and cried out, "May all be well with the worlds!" With full concentration, Ram again invoked the Gandharva Astra, which caused hundreds of thousands of arrows to appear and counter Ravana's weapons. Those awful and demoniac missiles fell to the ground and burned up, being pierced by Ram's fiery shafts. The battle between Ram and Ravana could only be compared to itself. Such a fight had never been seen at any time, even by the gods. They watched anxiously as Ram came under repeated ferocious attacks from the lord of the Rakshasas. Ram remained calm. He took from his bow a great razor-headed arrow that resembled a venomous serpent. In an instant, he fitted it and fired the arrow at Ravana. That arrow, imbued with mystic power, divided into 10 and tore off the demon's heads. But they immediately grew again. Ram sent another weapon, which again severed the Rakshasas' heads, and again they grew back. Ram struck down 100 heads, but the demon remained standing. Without slowing his attack for even a moment, Ram contemplated this wonderful phenomenon. How was this demon to be killed? No weapon seemed able to take his life. It looked like the fight might go on forever. Vibhishan quickly approached Ram. He told him that the demon had a boon from Brahma, that his heads and arms could never be destroyed. If in Ravana's heart was a store of celestial nectar which renewed the life in his body, the only way to kill him was to strike at his heart with a divine weapon that could dry up the nectar. As Ram considered his next move, all the while raining arrows upon Ravana, Muttali turned to Ram and spoke, "O Ram, the time for this one's death has come. Recall now the prayer Agastya told you. Agastya also gave you an arrow when you were in the forest. Imbue that arrow with the force of the Brahmastra and kill the demon by piercing his heart." Accepting Muttali's advice, Ram remembered the celestial arrow which Agastya had given him long ago in the forest. At once it appeared in his hand and he fitted it to his bow. Its shaft was made of ether and its weight consisted of the Mundra and Meru mountains. The wind god presided over its shaft, the fire god over its plumes, and the sun god was installed at its point. It looked like a rod of universal destruction wielded by the time spirit himself. Ram again chanted the Aditya Hridaya prayer and then invoked the infallible Brahmastra. As Ram drew back the arrow, he shone so brilliantly that no one could look at him. He released the weapon and it flew at Ravana, lighting up the earth and sky and roaring like a tumultuous ocean. It struck the demon on his chest even as he stood firing his own weapons at Ram. Piercing right through his heart, the arrow emerged from Ravana's body, soaked in blood, and entered the earth. Ravana whirled about and let out a cry which seemed to shake the entire creation. His bow dropped from his hands, and he fell from his chariot like a mountain struck down by Indra's thunderbolt. The Rakshasas fled panic-stricken in every direction. They shed tears of grief on seeing their lord slain. The monkeys leapt about, chasing the fleeing Rakshasas and shouting with joy. The sound of drums and other celestial instruments sounded from the sky. Delightful breezes blew on the battlefield, carrying heavenly odors. A dazzling shower of brilliant flowers fell from the sky and covered Ram's chariot. The gods and rishis praised Ram, who stood blazing with splendor. The battle was over. Ram climbed down from the chariot and was surrounded by Lakshman, Sugriv, Hanuman, Angada, Jambavan, and Bibhishan, who all praised and cheered him for his incredible feat. As he gazed upon his brother's dead body, Bibhishan then began to lament. "Alas, O Ravana, how have you been killed? After displaying your power for a long time, you now lay motionless with your brilliant diadem thrown off. The very fate which I predicted has come to pass. Why did you not heed my counsel that was meant always for your good? Overcome by lust, greed, and anger, you have met the sure result of harboring these three mortal enemies of the soul. Oh, my brother, now that you have been slain, everything seems void. The sun has fallen to earth. The moon has merged in darkness. Fire does not emit flames, and all energy has become bereft of effort. All of Lanka is lost." Although shunned by Ravana, Vibhishan had loved his brother and had always desired his welfare. He fell by his side and continued to cry out. Ram approached him and placed an arm around him, consoling him with soft words. "Your brother has died a hero's death. No hero has ever been known to be always victorious. Sooner or later, a warrior will die at the edge of weapons. This is the end sought by all great fighters. O Bibhishan, there's no need to mourn for Ravana, for his death was glorious." Lakshman also consoled the grief-stricken Vibhishan, telling him spiritual truths. Although Ravana's body had fallen, his soul remained alive. Indeed, having been purified by Ram's weapons and by his death in battle, he would surely have attained an exalted destination. There was no gain in lamenting over a corpse once the soul has departed. Bibhishan should now perform the last rites for his brother and then assume the rulership of Lanka. As Lakshman finished speaking with Bibhishan, Ravana's wives suddenly appeared on the battlefield. Crying like female elephants, they fell upon their husband's body and bathed him with tears. Dozens of Rakshasis, their hair and garments in disarray, surrounded the fallen Rakshasa. They rolled on the ground and wailed in agony. Ravana's principal wife, Mandodari, was at their head. She swooned upon seeing her husband dead on the battlefield. After regaining her senses, she gazed upon his face and lamented loudly, her voice choked with tears. "Alas, my lord, how have you fallen at the hands of a man? You, who struck terror in the hearts of the gods, Gandharvas, Siddhas, and even great rishis, now lie killed by a mere mortal who came walking from Ayodhya, a city of humans. I do not consider Ram to be an ordinary man. He must surely be Vishnu, the sustainer of all the worlds, the unborn, inconceivable, and all-powerful supreme person. None other could have laid you low. O Ravana, although you conquered your senses, winning great boons from your austerities, in the end you have been conquered by those senses. Fallen prey to lust, you desire to enjoy the sinless Sita. By stealing away that godly lady, the very emblem of chastity and nobility, you brought destruction upon yourself and all your kinsfolk." Mandodari could not contain her grief. She slumped over Ravana's body and continued to wail in piteous tones. "O hero, where have you gone now, leaving me forlorn? When I was always your devoted servant, why did you long for Sita? Alas, my life is useless, as I could not satisfy my lord. Although we roamed and sported together in every delightful region of heaven, I am now fallen into a fearful ocean of grief. Woe be to the fleeting fortune of kings." Mandodari looked up with tear-filled eyes and saw Ravana's brother nearby. "Here stands the pious Vibhishan," she cried. "Having ignored his wise advice, you now lay slain. Surely, a sinner always reaps the results of sin in the end. just as the virtuous also receive their results. Your brother will now enjoy royal fortune while you are sent to the next world. Mandodari cried over her husband's body for a long time. Everyone stood by silently, allowing her to vent her grief. Finally, the Rakshasa's king's other wives gently lifted her up. They supported her on both sides and led her away while she continued to wail. Ram spoke with Vibhishana. Death has ended all animosity. Ravana is now the same to me as you. Please perform the proper rites for his everlasting spiritual good. In accordance with time-honored custom, Ram wanted to immediately perform the last rites for his fallen foe. Vibhishan stood reflecting for some moments. He told Ram that he felt unable to perform the funeral rites for his brother. Ravana was cruel, merciless, and given to heinous sins. Although his brother, he was not worthy of Vibhishan's respect. Ravana's obsequies were an act of worship he could not honestly perform. Ram smiled. O Vibhishan, no disdain should ever be felt for the soul. Once dead, a person's soul leaves his body and proceeds to its next life. Ravana's sinful body is now dead, but his pure soul continues to live. The soul is always worthy of respect. You should therefore carry out the rites for the eternal good of your brother's immortal soul. Vibhishan looked down at Ravana's body. It was a fact. The soul of all beings was a pure part of the Supreme Lord. Ignorance only exists in the external material body, not the soul. Ravana's sins, which proceeded from his ignorance, had ended with the end of his body. Especially, he had been slain by the Lord himself. All taints of sin were surely cleansed by such a death. Vibhishan at once began the necessary rituals. He had his brother's body brought into Lanka, and he lit a sacrificial fire, making offerings of grains and ghee and worshipping Vishnu on Ravana's behalf. Along with the elderly Rakshasas and Yutadhanas, headed by Ravana's grandfather, Malayavan, Vibhishan carried out all the rituals strictly in accord with the instructions of scripture. Ravana's body was placed on a huge bier. He was draped with golden silks and covered with flower garlands. To the sound of various musical instruments, the dead Rakshasa was borne by 100 demons to a consecrated spot. Brahmins among the Rakshasas carried the sacrificial fire in front of Ravana. They built a pyre out of logs and a fragrant sandal and padmaka wood, along with ushira roots and bhadrakali grass. The demons then placed Ravana upon the pyre and threw handfuls of parched rice, sesame seeds, and kusha grass. After uttering sacred mantras and sprinkling the pyre with ghee, Vibhishana set it alight. It quickly blazed up, and within moments, the Rakshasa's body was reduced to ashes. Chapter 14. Sita's Ordeal. Chapter 14. Sita's Ordeal. After witnessing Ravana's destruction, the gods and rishis departed joyfully for their various heavenly abodes. Muttali bowed before Ram and received permission to return his chariot to Indra. Ram watched as the celestial vehicle rose high into the sky and disappeared. His fury with the Rakshasas had completely subsided. He now thought of Vibhishan's installation as the new king of Lanka. As the city was upon the earth, it was within the jurisdiction of the earth's emperors, although inhabited by the Rakshasas. Thus Ram desired to install the pious Vibhishana as its righteous ruler so as to quickly reestablish order in the devastated city. Ram asked Lakshman to perform the ceremony of consecrating Vibhishan on Lanka's throne. Lakshman immediately had the monkeys fetch seawater in large golden jars. With that water, he duly consecrated Vibhishan, carefully following the directions given in the Vedas. Vibhishan sat upon the throne and blazed with regal splendor. The Rakshasas were joyful to see Ravana's brother assume the rulership of Lanka, and they brought him many gifts and offerings. Vibhishan offered all of these to Ram, who accepted them out of his love for the Rakshasa. When the ceremony was complete, Ram asked Hanuman to go quickly to Sita. He was aching to see her again, and he said to Hanuman, "Please inform the princess of the good news. I long to see her. Tell her to make herself ready so that very soon I may meet with her." Hanuman at once left for the gardens. As he made his way through Lanka, he was honored by the Rakshasas, who folded their palms as he passed by. Quickly reaching the Ashok Grove, he saw Sita still lying at the foot of the Shimshak tree. She was unaware of Ram's victory and appeared mournful. Upon seeing Hanuman, however, she quickly stood up in hope. Surely the monkey must be bearing good news. The princess listened expectantly as Hanuman told her all that had happened. "O godly lady, your husband has come out victorious. The demon Ravana is no more, and the virtuous Bibhishan is now the ruler of Lanka. Dear mother, your woes are ended. Please prepare yourself to see your lord Ram." Sita was stunned with joy. She could not make any reply and simply stood for some time gazing at Hanuman, with tears flowing from his eyes. At last she said in a choked voice, "O good monkey, I cannot think of anything I can offer you in return for this news. Not gold, nor silver, nor gems, nor even the sovereignty of all the worlds is equal to the value of this message." Hanuman replied that hearing her joyful reply was itself more valuable than any gift. And having seen Ram emerge victorious and happy, Hanuman desired nothing more. Sita praised Hanuman again and again as the monkey stood with his head bowed and his palms together. When the princess stopped speaking, he said to her, "If you permit me, I shall punish these wicked Rakshasis who have made your life so miserable. I would like to give them a good thrashing. They surely deserve death for their evil conduct against you, O divine lady." Sita pondered for some moments within herself. She looked at the Rakshasis who sat at a distance, no longer concerned with her now that Ravana was dead. Turning to Hanuman, Sita replied, "These Rakshasis were simply carrying out Ravana's order. No blame should be attached to them. Furthermore, any suffering I felt was surely the result of my own past misdeeds, for such is the universal law. Indeed, there is an ancient maxim which is always the code of the virtuous. A righteous man does not consider the offenses of others against him. At all costs, he always observes the vow of not returning evil for evil. For the virtuous consider good conduct their ornament. Sita said that compassion should always be shown towards sinners, for no one was ever found to be free from sin." Admonished in this way, Hanuman bowed to her and made no argument. Sita had spoken well, quite in accord with her noble character. After reflecting on her words for some moments, the monkey then asked, "I wish to return now to Ram. Please give me a message for him. Please give me a message for him." Sita replied that she only wished to see him. Hanuman assured her that she would very soon see Ram. Bowing once again, he left and made his way back to Bibhishan's palace, where Ram was waiting. Hearing of Sita's condition, Ram asked Bibhishan to arrange that she be given celestial clothes and ornaments. "O king of the Rakshasas, please have that princess bathed with heavenly unguents and dressed in the finest silks. Then have her brought here. My heart is burning with desire to see her again." Bibhishan personally went to Sita with Ram's instruction. But Sita, anxious to see Ram, said, "I wish to see my husband immediately without having bathed and dressed." Sita had suffered through almost a year of torture. She had never stopped thinking of the day she would be reunited with Ram. Here it was at last. How could she possibly wait another moment? Bibhishan replied gently that it was Ram's desire that she prepare herself. Sita, accepting Ram's word as her order, acquiesced. And Bibhishan immediately arranged for her bath and clothing. In a short while, the princess was adorned in costly robes and jewels worthy of the consorts of the gods. She mounted a golden palanquin bedecked with celestial gems and was borne into Ram's presence. Crowds of rakshasas and monkeys filled the streets, all anxious for a glimpse of the princess. Seated on the palanquin behind a silk veil, Sita shone like the sun, shrouded by a cloud. Rakshasas wearing dark jackets and turbans and carrying staffs fitted with bells cleared a path for her. The crowd of onlookers, who were roaring like the ocean, parted as the palanquin made its way slowly along the main highway. Bibhishan went ahead and informed Ram that his wife was on her way. Hearing that she was on a palanquin, Ram said to Bibhishan, "The princess should be asked to dismount and proceed on foot. The people desire to see her, and that is not condemned by scripture." A house, a veil, or a costume are never the protection of a chaste woman. Her character alone is her shield. Lakshman, Sugriv, and Hanuman looked at Ram with surprise. He appeared to be displeased with Sita. His expression was stern and thoughtful. As Bibhishan conducted Sita into his presence, Ram looked at her without smiling. Sita was overjoyed to see Ram again, and her face shone like the moon, but she felt abashed when she saw his grave expression. Her limbs trembled, and she stood before him with her head bowed and hands folded. Ram's heart was torn. He deeply wanted to show his love for Sita and take her back at once, but he feared public censure. As a king, he wanted to set the highest example for the people. Sita had been in the house of another man for almost a year. Whatever the circumstances, that would surely be criticized by some of the people. Questions about her chastity might be raised. What would never be acceptable for the wife of an emperor? That would never be acceptable for the wife of an emperor. Looking at Sita, whose face was bathed in tears, Ram said, "O Blessed One, I have won you back today after conquering my enemies in battle. I have avenged the insult given me through your abduction. You too are fully avenged, O Princess. The evil Ravana is no more." Ram stopped speaking, his heart balking at what he had to say next. Steadying his mind, he continued to address the tremulous Sita. "Now that I have wiped off the stain of insult on my noble house and established my truthfulness and resolve, no further purpose remains for me in this matter. O gentle lady, I have not undergone this endeavor out of a desire to again have you as my wife. You have long dwelt in the house of another. How then can I take you back into my house? Your good character has become suspect. Ravana clasped you in his arms and looked upon you with a lustful eye. Therefore, my attachment for you has ended. Please go wherever you may desire. Perhaps you may now find shelter with Lakshman or Bharat or Shatrughna or even Bibhishan. As beautiful as you are, O Sita, how could Ravana have left you alone?" Sita was shocked. She wept loudly and shook like a sapling caught in a storm. Greatly shamed by her husband's words, she shrank into herself. Ram's speech had pierced her like poisoned arrows, and she cried in pain for a long time. Gradually gathering her senses, she replied to Ram in faltering tones, "Why do you address me with such unkind words, O hero, like a common man addressing some vulgar woman? You are judging all women by the standards of a degraded few. Give up your doubts in me, for I am without blame. When Ravana snatched me, I was helpless and dragged against my will. Although I could not control my limbs, my heart remained under my control. It did not deviate from you even slightly. If, in spite of our living together in love for so long, you still do not trust me, then I am surely undone for good." Angry, Sita admonished and taunted Ram. Why had he gone to such endeavors? He could have sent a message with Hanuman telling her that he was rejecting her. Then he would have immediately given up her life and saved him all the effort of war. It seemed he had given way to anger alone, just like an ordinary man. Like a mean man, he had not considered her devotion and chastity toward him. He had forgotten her divine origins and taken her to be an ordinary woman. Sita, still weeping, turned to Lakshman. "O prince, please raise for me a pyre. This is my only recourse now. I no longer desire to live, being smitten with false reproaches. As my husband has renounced me in a public gathering, I shall enter fire and give up my life." Lakshman was indignant. How could Ram act in this way? He looked at his brother, but Ram remained impassive. He returned Lakshman's glance with a slight nod. Lakshman understood his desire, and feeling deeply pained and perplexed, constructed a pyre. Ram stood like Ramaraj, the god of justice. No one dared approach him or say anything. Only Sita came near him. She walked around him in respect and approached the blazing fire. The princess then prayed with folded hands, "If I have never been unfaithful to Ram, either in mind, words, or body, may the fire god protect me on all sides. As my heart ever abides in Ram, so may the fire god save me now. As all the gods are witness to my chastity, let the fire god protect me." After uttering this prayer, Sita walked around the fire and then fearlessly entered it before the vast assembly. Sita seemed like a golden altar with its sacred fire. Gods, rishis, gandharvas, siddhas, and other divine beings observed Sita walking deep into the fire, and all the women in the assembly sent up a great cry as they watched her ascend the pyre, like a goddess fallen from the heaven and entering hell. A gasp of amazement and shock came from the crowd as she disappeared into the flames. Ram was blinded by tears. He was afflicted to hear the cries of the people. With his mind set on virtue and his heart racked with grief, he watched Sita walk into the fire. From the sky, the gods headed by Brahma addressed Ram, "How are you allowing this divine lady to enter fire? Do you not recall your actual identity? What is this play of yours, O Lord?" Ram looked at the gods and folded his palms. He replied, "I take myself to be a human. My name is Ram, the son of Dasarath. Let Brahma tell me who I was in my former lives." From the sky, the four-headed Brahma, seated on his swan carrier, replied, "O Ram, I know you as the original creator of the cosmos. You are Vishnu and Narayan, the one supreme person who is known by many names. All the gods come from you, and the worlds rest upon your energy. You exist within and without all things and reside in the heart of every being. Your existence and actions are inconceivable. You have appeared as Ram for the destruction of Ravana and the deliverance of your beloved servants, of your devoted servants. Now that you have accomplished your purposes, you should return to your own abode." Ram bowed his head and said nothing. At that moment, the fire god emerged from the fire holding Sita in his arms. The princess was dressed in a red robe, and she shone brightly like the rising sun. She wore a garland of celestial flowers, and she was adorned with brilliant gems. Her dark curly hair framed her face, which glowed with transcendent beauty. Agni placed Sita before Ram and spoke in a voice that boomed out like thunder. "Here is your wife Sita. No sin exists in her, neither by word, deed, nor thought. Not even by glance has she ever been unfaithful to you." Ravana forcefully snatched her away while she was helpless and forlorn. Although kept captive by him, her mind and heart remained focused on you at every moment. She did not give a single thought to Ravana despite being tempted and threatened by him in so many ways. Therefore, O Ram, accept her back with an open heart. Ram experienced great joy upon hearing Agni's speech. His eyes flooded with tears and he replied to the fire god, "Sita needed this purificatory ideal. Otherwise, the world would have condemned me as foolish and controlled by lust. She dwelt in Ravana's house for a long time, and her chastity had to be proven to the world. Although I know of her undivided love for me, indeed, guarded as she is by her own moral power, Ravana could not have violated Sita any more than the sea could transgress its bounds." Ram declared Sita to be as inseparable from him as sunlight from the sun. He could no more renounce her than a virtuous man could renounce righteousness. Sita bloomed with happiness. She sat next to Ram on a golden throne. The gods and rishis appeared in the assembly offering praises to Ram. Shiva personally came before Ram and said, "Can we have asan for her? You have killed the scourge and dread of the universe, O Ram. You should now depart for Ayodhya and comfort your relatives there. Then be pleased to rule over this world for a long time." Shiva told Ram that his father, Dasarath, was present, seated in a celestial chariot in the sky. Ram looked up and saw the chariot descending slowly, his father appearing in a body that shone with celestial splendor, gazed down at him, leaving the chariot. He came down to earth and embraced Ram tightly. He sat next to his son and began to speak. Although I reside with Indra, I do not feel as much pleasure there as I do now upon seeing you again. The words uttered by Kaikeyi when sending you into exile are still impressed upon my heart, but today I am fully rid of my sorrow. I have been redeemed by you, dear Ram. 14 years have passed, and your exile is ended. I long to see you return to Ayodhya and assume the throne. After pacifying Kaushalya and the mighty Bharat, O Ram, I now understand your identity. You are the Supreme Lord, born on earth for the good of the world. Ram asked his father to retract the words he had uttered when he had disowned Kaikeyi and her son. They were both blameless in every respect. Dasaratha assented to Ram's request. He embraced Lakshman and praised him for his selfless service to Ram, asking him to continue that service when Ram became the emperor. Dasaratha then spoke to Sita. O daughter, do not think ill of Ram for his repudiation of you. He only desired to prove your absolute purity. Your entering the fire was an act which will forever overshadow the renown of all virtuous ladies. Sita folded her palms and bowed to her father-in-law, who rose again to his aerial chariot and left for the heavens. The other gods paid their respects to Ram and then left for their own abodes. Indra approached Ram and said, "A sight of the gods can never go in vain. O Ram, pray tell us what you desire, and it shall be done at once." Smiling, Ram asked Indra to return to life all the slain monkeys, even those whose bodies had been torn and devoured. He also asked that wherever the monkeys may live, there should be abundant fruits and roots for their food. Indra replied, "Although difficult to grant, your desire shall be fulfilled. Let all the monkeys rise again, even those whose heads and limbs have been severed. Let them be reunited with their families, and let trees full of fruits, even out of season, forever grow where they dwell." The powerful god sprinkled celestial nectar from the sky. The monkeys who were killed then rose from the ground, amazed to see themselves healed and restored to life. They looked at one another and asked, "What miracle is this?" They leapt and shouted for joy, coming together like a great roaring ocean. Indra bid farewell to Ram and departed along with all the other gods. As the gods' blazing chariots disappeared into the sky, Ram ordered that the monkeys camp for the night while he and Sita rested in Bibishan's palace. Chapter 15. Back to Ayodhya. The following morning, Bibishan approached Ram and told him his bath was ready. The Rakshasa said, "Hot and cold baths, as well as every sort of cosmetic unguents and perfume are ready, and we have prepared heavenly garments and garlands. Excellent maidservants, well-versed in the arts of decoration, are at your service, O Ram." Ram replied that he had no desire for any kind of pleasure until after he had seen Bharat. He told Bibishan, "That prince is now living in austerity. He bathes in cold rivers and eats only roots and fruits gleaned from the forest. How can I accept any luxuries?" Ram asked Bibishan to find some means by which he could return quickly to Ayodhya. Bibishan replied that the heavenly Pushpaka chariot was available. Ravana took this chariot, which moves according to one's will, from Kuvera. "It still remains in Lanka, desiring to render you service, O Ram." Bibishan bowed low before Ram and repeatedly requested him to stay for a while in Lanka and accept his hospitality. But Ram was anxious to depart. He thought of his mother and of Bharat, how they must long to see him again. His exile was now over. He had promised to return immediately. If he did not return, they would surely be consumed by grief and anxiety. Bharat might even give up his life. Ram said, "You have already fully honored me with your first-class counsel and advice. You have served me well on the battlefield, and I am deeply indebted to you. But now you must grant me leave, O valiant Rakshasa. My task is accomplished, and I must return quickly to Ayodhya." Vibhishan acceded. He at once invoked the Pushpaka, and it appeared in the sky. Ram gazed with wonder at the glowing golden chariot, with its lofty jeweled encrusted mansions and countless golden trellises wreathed with garlands of heavenly flowers. After inviting Ram to board the chariot, Vibhishan said, "Is there any final service I can render you before you leave?" Ram asked the Rakshasa to bestow riches upon all the monkeys, give them abundant gold and jewels, and take back with them. The king should always reward his army. They should be well cared for and given everything they desire. They must lay down their lives for his sake. Vibhishan at once made arrangements for profuse wealth to be distributed to the monkeys. Then he helped Ram and Sita to ascend to the chariot. Ram again thanked Vibhishan for his service, and the Rakshasa sorrowfully watched him prepare to leave. Just as Ram was about to depart, Sugriv approached him. "O Ram, pray take the monkeys with you," he begged. "We all desire to see you installed as the emperor. After that, we will return to our own lands." Ram smiled and agreed. He invited all the monkeys to mount the celestial chariot, which was like a golden city. Looking at Vibhishan, he added, "You too should accompany me, O noble one. With all your kinsfolk and friends, please mount this chariot and come to Ayodhya." Once everyone was on board, the Pushpaka rose high into the air. It flew gracefully, with an image of a great swan at its front, seeming to draw it along. As it flew, Ram pointed out to Sita the sights below. He showed her the battlefield, telling her how all the principal Rakshasas had been slain. While they crossed the sea, he explained how Hanuman had leapt to Lanka. As the chariot reached Kishkinda, Ram had it stop, and he told Sugriv, "Quickly descend and fetch your wives and kinfolks, the monkeys. Excuse me. As the chariot reached Kishkinda, Ram had it stop, and he told Sugriv, "Quickly descend and fetch your wives and kinfolk, O monkey. They too should be brought to Ayodhya." With all the monkeys back aboard, the chariot continued. Soon they passed over the forest where Ram had spent his exile. When they reached Bhardraj Hermitage, Ram desired to meet with the Rishi. He stopped the chariot and went down to see the sage, bowing low before him. Bhardraj offered his blessings and informed Ram that Bharat was anxious to see him. The sage knew of everything in Ayodhya from his disciples, who visited the city frequently. He told Ram that everyone was expecting his return at every moment. Ram replied, "Please exert your power and make all these trees surrounding Ayodhya fill with heavenly fruits. All those who will travel to the city to witness my coronation should be amply fed." At once Bhardraj meditated, and by his mystic power all the trees for 20 miles around Ayodhya became heavy with fruits. The sage said to Ram, "You should enter Ayodhya tomorrow after sending ahead a messenger." Ram agreed and turned to Hanuman. He asked the monkey to proceed ahead to the city and inform Bhard that he would soon arrive. On the way, the monkey should stop at Sringavera and inform Guha of the news. Ram then said to Hanuman, "Closely observe Bharat's features when you tell him that I am returning. I wish to know his reaction. A kingdom rich in lands and wealth could surely attract anyone's mind. If he has developed an attachment for the kingdom, then I shall let him continue to rule as emperor." Hanuman left at once. He bounded swiftly through the forest lands and soon reached Guha's abode, telling him the happy news. The Nishada king was overjoyed, and he immediately set about preparing to leave for Ayodhya. Without delay, Hanuman continued on to Ayodhya, and he arrived early in the morning. At a distance of 2 miles from the city, he found Bharata's dwelling. There he saw the prince, clad in black deerskins, emaciated from fasting, his hair matted. He sat by his wooden hut and shone with ascetic glory. And he was surrounded by his ministers and priests dressed in similar ascetic clothing. Hanuman approached Bard and found him continuously repeating Ram's name. The monkey at once lay flat on the ground, offering his obeisances. Then, with folded palms, he stood before the prince and said, "Having completed his exile and slain Ravan, Ram will soon arrive. Accompanied by Sita and Lakshman, he has asked after your welfare, and he longs to be reunited with you." Bharat was overwhelmed with joy and sank to the ground in a faint. After regaining consciousness, he stood up and embraced Hanuman. The prince shed tears of happiness, and he spoke in an exuberant voice. "O monkey, I do not know if you are a god, a rishi, or what, but you have told me the most wonderful news. I shall give you 100,000 cows and many beautiful maidens adorned with gold and jewels." Bharat asked Hanuman to tell him in full what had happened to Ram since his departure, and the monkey recounted the tale. Bharat was delighted. He told Shatrughna to go to the city and spread the news of Ram's impending return. Bharat ordered that the city be fully decorated with pendants and garlands, and everyone should come out to greet Ram. Hanuman could easily understand Bharat's heart. Ram should have no doubt about his brother. His devotion for Ram was obviously no less than the devotion Hanuman himself felt. The monkey shed tears of joy as he witnessed Bharat's display of love for Ram. Shatrughna, along with Bharat's ministers, went into the city and began to prepare. They had Kaushalya and Sumitra placed on palanquins and brought to Nandigram, where Bharat was living. Behind them came thousands of citizens, some walking, some on elephants or horseback, and others on chariots. The blasts of conches and the roll of drums was tumultuous. A great roar came from the huge crowds, and it appeared as if the entire population of Ayodhya had come out of the city. The 14 years of Ram's exile had already ended, and all the citizens longed only for his return. Many other monarchs were also present in Ayodhya, having been invited by Bharat to be present when Ram returned. By the end of the day, the whole region of Nandigram was completely crowded with people, all hoping for a glimpse of Ram. Bharat stood gazing to the south. He felt anxious. Had this monkey been telling the truth? Was Ram really about to return? When would he arrive? He questioned Hanuman again and again, and the monkey repeatedly assured him. Suddenly, Bharat saw in the distance the shining Pushpaka. Hanuman then shouted, pointing it out to Bharat. "Here comes the highly glorious Ram," he cried. The shout was echoed by the crowd of citizens, and a great clamor arose. They looked with amazement at the celestial vehicle carrying Ram and Sita, which appeared above the horizon like the sun and moon joined together. Bharat fell to the ground like a rod, offering his prostrated obeisances with his arms outstretched towards the chariot. The Pushpaka descended to earth, and Ram dismounted along with Lakshman and Sita. Bharat ran over to them with Shatrughna, and the four brothers embraced each other for a long time. All the principal monkeys, headed by Sugriv, Angada, and Hanuman, assumed human forms and disembarked from the chariot. Along with Bibhishan, they were greeted warmly by Bharat, who embraced them all. Bharat said to Sugriv, "You are like a fifth brother to all of us, O monkey king." Ram saw Kaushalya nearby, and he broke free from the crowd of people who were pressing in around him. Quickly approaching his mother, he fell before her and clasped her feet. She was pale and emaciated through grief and separated from her son. Next to her was Sumitra, who appeared in a similar condition. Ram also bowed before her and touched her feet with reverence. As they met Ram, the faces of both the ladies looked like celestial lotuses in full bloom. Ram greeted Kaikeyi and other royal ladies who had come there. He offered his obeisance to Vasishtha and the Brahmins, who uttered auspicious hymns from the Vedas. Ram then bowed at the feet of his father-in-law, Janak, who shed tears of joy to see him returned safe with Sita. As he stood up and looked around, Ram smiled at the citizens, bringing joy to their hearts. Bharat brought Ram's sandals, which had been kept upon Ayodhya's throne. He placed them before Ram and said, "Here is the entire kingdom. held in trust by me on your behalf. Now I render it back to you. Here is the entire kingdom held in trust by me on your behalf. Now I render it back to you, O Ram. My birth has borne fruit today, and my deepest desire is fulfilled, for I see you returned as the king of Ayodhya. Bharat told Ram that everything in the kingdom, its storehouses, army, and crops, had increased tenfold while he was gone. All this is due to your influence alone, O Ram, for I ruled the kingdom thinking only of your example. Ram embraced Bharat again and again, and the two brothers shed tears of joy. Seeing the display of affection between them, the monkeys and Bibhishan wept. Ram then looked up at the Pushpaka and said, O Pushpaka, you may now return to your master Kuvera. I thank you for your service. The heavenly chariot then rose into the sky and disappeared. When everyone was seated, Bharat addressed Ram. Please assume the rulership of this world. Although I have officiated in your absence, I can no more rule in your presence than a candle can give light in the presence of the sun. Let the world see you shining with dazzling splendor after being consecrated upon this throne of Ayodhya. We all long only for this, O Raghava. Ram replied, Let it be so, and a great cheer went up from the assembly. Ram then had the royal barbers cut his hair, which was still in a mass of matted locks. He took his bath and dressed in costly silks and brilliant gold ornaments. Many garlands of celestial flowers were hung around his neck, and he was daubed with sandal paste in various colors. Emperor Dasarath's widows dressed in decorated Sita. Her splendid beauty captivated the soul of whoever looked upon her. When Ram and his three brothers were all prepared, Bharat summoned Sumantra and the royal chariot. He personally took the reins, and Ram climbed aboard with Sita. As the chariot proceeded toward the city, Lakshman and Vibhishan fanned Ram on either side with white whisks, while Shatrughna held the royal parasol over his head. Hundreds of sages walked in front of the chariot, chanting mantras and hymns. Behind the chariot came Sugriv, still in human semblance, riding upon a great elephant, and followed by 9,000 other elephants bearing other monkeys. The procession moved in state through Ayodhya, accompanied by the blast of countless conches and the roll of thousands of drums. They were followed by crowds of citizens, all anxious to see Ram's coronation. The city streets were beautifully decorated with flags and garlands. From the balconies of the mansions, women threw handfuls of flower petals and parched rice. Ram looked around at everyone and smiled, raising his hand in blessing. Ram entered his father's palace and ordered Bharat to take Sugriv to his own palace. Bharat left Ram to rest for the night, and after arranging for all the monkeys' accommodations, he told Sugriv, The coronation will take place tomorrow. Please arrange to fetch water from the ocean and rivers. Sugriv agreed and summoned Hanuman, Jambavan, Rishaba, and Gavaya. He gave each of them a golden pail encrusted with gems and told them to bring water from each and every of the four oceans in the north, south, east, and west. The monkeys bounded away and swiftly carried out the order. Another 500 monkeys fetched water from different sacred rivers all over the country. By morning, all this water had been given to Vasishtha for the ceremony. The coronation began early in the morning, and Ram was ritualistically bathed by the Brahmins. 16 beautiful virgin girls consecrated him in accordance with the scriptural procedure. Following this, Ram was bathed by his ministers and chief warriors, and then by the leaders of the trading community. From the air, the four guardians of the world sprinkled Ram with celestial nectar. When the bathing was over, Vasishtha had the crown placed on Ram's head. This crown had been created by Brahma and was first worn by Manu himself. It shone with the brilliance of the sun. Wearing that golden crown and seated upon a throne made of precious stones, Ram was radiant and difficult to behold. Seated next to him was the exquisitely adorned Sita, enhancing Ram's grandeur and magnificence. Vayu came in person and presented to Ram an unfading garland of 100 celestial lotuses, which imbued its wearer with unfailing vigor and energy. At the urging of Indra, he also gave Ram a priceless necklace of pearls, interspersed with heavenly jewels of every variety. Taking that necklace, Ram turned and placed it on Sita's breast. She immediately lifted it in her two delicate hands and glanced over at Hanuman. Understanding her desire, Hanuman knelt before the princess, and she placed the necklace over his head. Rising up again, with that celestial ornament on his chest, Hanuman appeared like a dark thundercloud decorated with lightning bolts. Hanuman ki! Gandharvas sang while the apsaras danced, their mind-stealing dances, filled with movements and gestures deep with meaning. The huge crowds cried out, "Victory to Ram! And all glories to Sita and Ram!" The earth itself seemed to rejoice and gave forth abundant crops and fruits, as well as flowers which released a delightful fragrance, carried on gentle breezes. The gods filled the canopy of the sky, and all the divine beings experienced the highest ecstasy upon seeing Ram united with Sita. Ram turned to Sita and smiled. His purpose was fulfilled. Sita Ram Hanum Lakshman Ki Jai. Thus ends and completes the reading of the entire Ramayana, just in the nick of time. Now, there is an epilogue. A month had passed since the coronation. Gradually, the celebrations ended and life in Ayodhya returned to normal. Knowing that his guests were thinking of returning to their own kingdoms, Ram began to say his farewells. He spoke first to his father-in-law, Janak, who had been staying with him at his palace. Folding his palms in reverence, Ram said, "My lord, surely you are our immovable support. We stand protected by you. O king, by virtue of your ascetic power and your blessings, I was able to slay Ravana. The bonds of affection between our two families are unbreakable. Please accept these gifts and then feel free to proceed back to Mithila at your pleasure. Bharat and Shatrughna will follow at your heels and escort you there." Tears filled Janak's eyes as he witnessed Ram's humility. He looked over at the great pile of riches Ram was offering him. "I feel gratified simply by your sight, O Ram. Let all this wealth be bestowed upon my daughter Sita. I have no wish to leave, but duty dictates that I return to Mithila. I shall now depart, but my mind will never leave you." Janak rose to leave and tightly embraced Ram. He then went out of the chamber, followed by his ministers and by Bharat and Shatrughna. One by one, Ram said fond farewells to all the other kings who had come for the coronation, offering each of them gold and other wealth as parting gifts. Those kings all expressed their sorrow to be leaving and gazed at Ram's face without feeling satiated. After circumambulating him in respect, they gathered together their followers and armies and slowly marched out of Ayodhya. The earth shook as the many hundreds of kings and princes left the city on their golden chariots, accompanied by their multitude of troops. As they left, they expressed their disappointment that they and their armies had not been able to join Ram in his fight against Ravana. "Surely this great display of might is useless, as we were not able to engage it in Ram's service," they lamented. "Bharat summoned us too late." When all the kings had gone, Ram spoke with the monkey chiefs. He thanked them again for all their service and embraced them with love. Taking valuable ornaments from his own body, Ram placed them on the bodies of Angada and Hanuman. He spoke affectionately to all the monkeys, offering them profuse quantities of riches. "O Vanaras, you should depart now for Kishkinda. Rule over your subjects with justice and love. You have all rendered me a very great service, which I shall never forget." Hanuman knelt before Ram and folded his palms. "O Ram, I do not know how I can leave you. I have one request before I go. Please let my supreme affection for you stand forever. May my devotion remain constant and may life remain in my body for as long as your story is being told on this earth. Let me stay in some heavenly region, continuously hearing your story being told to me by apsaras and other celestial beings. In this way, my pain of separation from you will be allayed. Ram smiled. It shall be so, O prince of monkeys. Your life is indeed your fame. Your life and indeed your fame will endure for as long as my story lasts in the world. That will be for as long as the worlds themselves last. I am forever indebted to you, O monkey. May my obligation to you stay always in my heart. May the time never come when I need to repay your service, for such times are times of difficulty. The monkeys, who felt as if the past month in Ram's company had been only a day, reluctantly departed from Ayodhya, their eyes filled with tears and their minds absorbed in thoughts of Ram. Ram then said farewell to Bibhishan, asking him to rule Lanka with righteousness. He also instructed the Pushpaka chariot to make its way back to Kuvera in the heavenly planets. Within a few days, everyone had left, and Ram began his rule of Ayodhya, assisted by Lakshman and guided by the rishis. Within some days of his guest's departure, Ram was visited by a number of great sages headed by Agastya. After they had been received with all respect by Ram, they took their seats in the assembly hall. Questioned by Ram, Agastya related everything about Ravana's birth and history, as well as that of all the principal Rakshasas. The sage also told the royal court about the history of the great Vanaras. After Agastya had finished speaking, Ram said, O all-powerful sage, I am amazed at hearing your wonderful narrations. By your very sight, we have all been blessed. But I have one request. Soon I shall perform sacrifices for the good of the world. Please bless me that these will be successful. Indeed, if it pleases you, then come again to Ayodhya at that time to grace us with your holy presence. Ram requested all the sages to attend his sacrifice, and they replied, It shall be so. Then they rose in a body and left the assembly. As Ram ruled over Ayodhya, everything became auspicious. It was seen that nobody died prematurely, nor was there any fear of diseases. The world had no robbers, and no one suffered any harm from others. Every creature felt pleased, and all men were devoted to righteousness. They performed all their duties as service to Ram, and they always thought of him within their hearts. Rains fell when desired, and the earth gave forth abundant produce. All people had everything they needed and were fully satisfied, being free from avarice. 2 years passed. One day Ram was walking with Sita in the palace gardens. Having just heard that she had become pregnant, he smiled broadly and exclaimed, Excellent, O beautiful lady, tell me what desire of yours should be fulfilled. As they strolled, Sita admired the many blossoming trees and bushes in the garden. She was reminded of her time with Ram in the forest. Remembering the celestial beauty of the forest, she said, O Lord, I have a longing to once more visit the penance groves inhabited by the sages. Let me stay there for a night at the feet of those rishis. Ram squeezed Sita's hands. O princess, be it so. You will surely go tomorrow. The couple sat down in a shaded bower where they were entertained by apsaras and naga damsels who danced to the exquisite music played by Gandharvas. Soon the sun set and they retired for the evening into the palace inner chambers. The following morning, after he had performed his religious rituals, Ram entered his council hall. Taking his seat on a great golden throne, he inquired from his chief minister, O Bhadra, tell me, what are all the talks of the people? What do they say about me and about my rule? Kings who are not devoted to duty are criticized everywhere. With joined palms, Bhadra replied, O king, delightful are the talks I have heard from the people, mostly to discuss your conquest over Ravana and recovery of Mother Sita. Bhadra glanced downward as he spoke, and Ram, catching the gesture, asked, What else do they say, O minister, leave nothing out. Tell me both the good and the ill words which were spoken. I shall then know what must be done by myself. O Bhadra, speak without any fear or anguish. Bhadra took a deep breath. O Lord, listen as I relate the words I have heard while moving among the people. Everywhere in marketplaces, public squares, crossroads, and in the forest, the people are heard to recite the glories of your wonderful victory. However, O great emperor, I also heard criticism. Bhadra described how some of the citizens were questioning Ram's acceptance of Sita back into his home. They said that the princess, having been taken onto Ravana's lap and kept by him for almost 1 year, cannot now be considered pure. Because, O Ram, you have allowed her back into your house, these people say that they will have to tolerate similar unchaste behavior from their own wives. Whatever a king does becomes acceptable behavior for all the people. Bhadra looked down at the mosaic floor. Tears fell from the corners of his eyes. He had not wanted to tell his master about the criticisms, but he knew that nothing could be kept concealed from Ram. Ram appeared shocked. He looked around at his other ministers. Is this true? Are such talks indulged in by the citizens? All the ministers appeared aggrieved. They affirmed what Bhadra had said, each of them bowing low before Ram as he spoke. Ram became pensive. He dismissed the court and asked that Lakshman be summoned. As the prince entered the court, he saw Ram sitting with downcast expression, seeming like an eclipsed sun. He hurried to his side and asked what was wrong. Ram explained everything, then said, "Dear brother, the calumny of the people eats into my very vitals. It can never be tolerated by a virtuous monarch. Surely, I knew that this criticism would ensue, and thus did I test Sita at the time of her return. However, it seems that even though the gods have attested to her purity, the citizens are still not satisfied. Alas, surely one's infamy is easily proclaimed in this world." Ram shook his head as he went on. "Infamy is to be avoided by all means. It is censured even by the gods. As long as one's infamy remains current on earth, one stays in hell. Great souls always endeavor for fame and good repute in this world." Good repute. "To avoid disrepute, I would give up my brothers or even my own life. What then of Sita?" Ram instructed the astonished Lakshman to immediately take Sita out of Ayodhya and into the forest where she should be left. She was already expecting to go there for a visit, so he would not need to tell her the truth. Ram spoke gravely, "I will not hear any arguments against this, dear brother. Sita should be taken this very day to Valmiki's ashram, which lies on the bank of the Ganges. After leaving her there, come back alone to Ayodhya." Having spoken, Ram left the court and went with a heavy heart to his personal quarters. Lakshman slowly made his way towards Sita's rooms. Surely this was the most difficult task he had ever faced. If it were left to him, thought Lakshman, he would go out and find the men who were criticizing Ram and put them straight. Where was the question that Sita could ever be unchaste? What fault had Ram committed? But Ram's order could not be avoided. Lakshman had Sumantra prepare his chariot, and he went before Sita, telling her that Ram had asked him to fulfill her desire to visit this forest. Highly pleased, Sita asked her servants to gather together many costly garments and precious jewels. "I shall distribute these to the wives of the rishis," she said, smiling. Lakshman said nothing in reply. He turned and walked toward the chariot, with Sita following behind. As she walked, she began to notice unusual omens. She spoke in surprise. "O son of Sumitra, why is it that my right eye throbs and my limbs shiver? My heart feels heavy and my mind is filled with anxiety. The earth itself seems distressed and all quarters appear desolate. May all be well with my Lord and indeed with all living beings." Sita prayed with folded hands as she made her way out of the palace. Reaching the chariot, Lakshman said, "All is well, O queen. There is no cause for fear. I think your mind is disturbed at the thought of separation from Ram for even a day. Ascend the chariot, and we shall leave it at once for the banks of the auspicious Ganges." Feeling reassured, Sita climbed aboard the large chariot, and Lakshman jumped up next to Sumantra in the front. The charioteer urged the horses, and they set off for the forest. After journeying for most of the day, they arrived at the riverbank, close to Valmiki's ashram. The three travelers got down and offered their respects to the holy river, bowing their heads to the ground. Thinking of Ram's order that he return at once, Lakshman looked at Sita, who was kneeling by the side of the river offering prayers. The time had come to leave her. She would have no difficulty finding Valmiki's ashram, which lay only a short distance away along a smooth forest path. Ashamed of himself for abandoning the queen, the prince did not want to enter the ashram. He sighed deeply. Now he would have to tell Sita the truth. Losing control of himself, he suddenly let out a great cry and fell to the earth. Sita looked up in surprise. What ails you, O Lakshman? We are here by the banks of the sacred Ganges and about to see the great rishis. Why do you wail at such a happy moment? You are making me sad. I know you are always by Ram's side. Is it that separation from him for even 2 days that is so intolerable? O hero, take heart. Ram is just as dear to me, but I do not give way to such sorrow. Sita asked Lakshman to take her to the ascetic's hermitage. Let us spend a single night with those sages, dear Lakshman, and then return to Ram's presence. Lakshman slowly got up. His face was covered with tears, and his body trembled. He folded his palms and replied with difficulty, O auspicious one, my heart feels as though pierced with a dart. I have been entrusted with a task that will make me worthy of the whole world's censure. Surely I would rather die. Sita was mystified. She had no idea what he meant. Feeling perturbed, she asked, What is wrong, my dear brother? Is something amiss with Ram? Speak out the truth at once. Lakshman sighed. Gazing downwards, he said, O Janaki, before we left Ayodhya, your husband was told about a most painful rumor circulating among the people. The words he heard cannot be repeated by me. Yet even though you have been proven to be free from blame by the gods themselves, Ram could not ignore the complaints. Struck with grief, he ordered me to bring you here and then return alone. O gentle lady, you have been forsaken by him out of fear of disrepute. Lakshman broke off, too pained to continue. Sita stood as though petrified. She could hardly believe what she was hearing. Had she been born only to experience grief? Covering her face with her two bejeweled hands, she dropped to the earth with a piteous wail. Getting a grip on himself, Lakshman said, Do not grieve. Do not give way to sorrow, O queen. Here's Valmiki's delightful ashram. Approach him for shelter and live here peacefully. Remain loyal to your husband. Observe fasts and practice prayer and meditation. Keeping Ram forever in your heart, you will doubtlessly secure your everlasting welfare. Sita fainted and lay on the ground, looking like a wild creeper bedecked with blossoms and torn from a tree. Coming round after some moments, she began to lament. Alas, this mortal frame was certainly fashioned by the Creator simply for sorrow. Indeed, today it seems like the very embodiment of grief. What sin did I commit that I should suffer in this way? How can I live all alone in the hermitage of the sages? What will I say to those ascetics when they ask me why I was abandoned by the great Raghava? I would at once drown myself in the flowing Ganges, but I would thus break Ram's line by killing his unborn child. O Lakshman, do what you must. Forsake me, the miserable one, but listen first to what I have to say now. Sita got to her feet. Shaking with sorrow, she held onto a tree for support as she spoke to Lakshman. O tiger among men, go then to Ayodhya and leave me here. After offering my respects to all my seniors, please say this to my lord. O Raghava, you should always act in such a way as to ensure your unrivaled fame in this world. Surely my abandonment is necessary to save you from ill repute. Thus, although torn by grief, I feel no anger. For a chaste woman, the husband is the master, deity, and preceptor. Having spoken her message for Ram, Sita dropped again to the ground. Lakshman looked at her with tear-filled eyes. Unable to make any reply, he cried loudly and bowed his head to the earth. He then walked around Sita with his palms folded. After regaining his balance of mind, he said, O faultless one, to say farewell, I now look upon your face for the first time. Oh, how can I bear to see you separated from Ram and dwelling in the deep forest? Crying, Lakshman bowed again to Sita and then ascended his chariot where Sumantra sat in silent sorrow. He urged on the horses and the chariot moved off. As he went along the path away from the river, the grief-stricken Lakshman could hear Sita's plaintive cries echoing through the woods, resembling those of a peacock calling for its mate. Shortly after Lakshman had left, A couple of young ascetics were walking in the woods to gather firewood when they heard Sita's sobs. Spying her through the trees, they ran back to their hermitage and spoke to Valmiki. "Sir, some noble lady is looking exactly like the goddess of fortune, lies near the riverbank, crying loudly in despair. Perhaps she has descended from the heavens. She certainly does not deserve any pain or sorrow. In our view, she is a divine woman who has sought your shelter. O Lord, we feel she is worthy of your protection." Valmiki could understand everything by virtue of his inner vision. Taking up an offering of Argya, he went quickly toward the river, followed by his disciples. The effulgent sage found Sita lying with her arms outstretched, weeping. He spoke to her comfortingly. "O gentle one, I know you are Dasara's daughter-in-law and the beloved queen of Ram. I am Valmiki. Welcome to my hermitage. By my meditations, I have understood why you are here. Indeed, all that exists within the three worlds is known to me. I thus know of your purity and blamelessness. O child, be composed and accept this offering. Come with me to the ashram of the female ascetics. They will surely take care of you as if you were their own daughter. It will be exactly like your own home." Sita bowed respectfully to the sage and accepted the argya he was proffering. She replied, "Let it be as you say, O great Rishi." Valmiki led the way to the lady's ashram. As they reached that secluded and delightful part of the woods, some of the elder ladies came out to greet them. One of them asked, "What would you have us do, O greatest of sages?" Valmiki introduced Sita to the ladies and asked that they take good care of her. He told them that she was expecting Ram's child and should be afforded all affection and respect, exactly as they would show the sage himself. Receiving their assurances, he then returned back to his own ashram. Sita began to reside with the ascetics, her mind always wrapped in thoughts of Ram. For some time, Lakshman and Sumantra traveled in silence, thinking of Sita. Finally, as the chariot came back out of the forest into the main road leading to Ayodhya, Lakshman said, "O charioteer, how great must be Ram's grief that he has again separated from Sita. Surely this is the effect of destiny. Fate is inexorable. It is not astonishing that Ram, who could extirpate the entire celestial host, should have to submit to fate. It seems to me that Ram was more pained by banishing Sita than he was by his own exile and even her abduction. Why did he submit to the cruel words of the citizens? What virtue did he acquire?" Sumantra comforted Lakshmana. He then told him of a story he had long ago heard from the Rishi Durvas. "This sage once stayed at Vashishta's hermitage. O prince, at that time your father went there and I drove his chariot. He inquired from Durvas about the prospects for his sons, how long they would live and rule over the world. Durvas then narrated the following history." Lakshman listened attentively as Sumantra repeated what he had heard from the Rishi. Durvas had described how in ancient times the Daityas had been conquered in battle by the gods. They had fled and sought shelter in the ashram of the powerful sage Bhrigu. Only the sage's wife had been present, and out of compassion, she let them hide in the ashram. When Vishnu, who was assisting the gods in their campaign against the Daityas, learned of this, he became angry with Bhrigu's wife and severed her head with his discus. Bhrigu had then returned and seen his wife slain by Vishnu. He immediately cursed Vishnu, saying, "As you have killed my innocent spouse, so you will take birth in the mortal world and meet with separation from your wife for many years." Sumantra concluded his story. As soon as he uttered the curse, Bhrigu became sorry and he bowed at Vishnu's feet and worshipped him. "However," Vishnu said, "O sage, for the good of the world, I shall accept this curse." Durvas then went on to explain that although Ram would become the lord of Ayodhya and rule over the earth for 11,000 years, he would be separated from Sita. "Thus it has come to pass, O Lakshman, for the words of the rishis can never fail." As Sumantra ended his story, the chariot approached Ayodhya. Entering the city, Lakshman went at once to the royal court. He found Ram seated on his throne with his face downcast. Lakshman fell at his feet and told him that Sita had been left at Valmiki's ashram. In a pained voice, he said, Do not grieve, O tiger among men. All gains end in loss. All elevations end in fall. All union must end in separation, and life itself always ends in death. The wise, therefore, do not become attached to wives, sons, friends, or riches. You know this well, O Ram. Therefore, take heart and shake off your sorrow. Lakshman assured Ram that the disrepute among the people would now be destroyed by Ram's act of sending Sita away. Ram appeared encouraged by Lakshman. He smiled and replied, "What you say is true, O hero. I shall take joy in the execution of my duties, for this is the path to everlasting happiness. Let us rest now for the night." Ram stood up and embraced his brother, and they then retired to their quarters. 12 years of Ram's rule went by. During that period, his dominion over the earth became firmly established as all other monarchs paid him tribute. His brother Shatrughna slew a powerful demon named Lavana, and all other demonic elements were subdued. Ram then thought of performing an Ashwamedha sacrifice for the benefit of the world. Arrangements were made and invitations sent out to all the kings of the earth, as well as to many great rishis. Valmiki was also invited, and he prepared himself to go to Ayodhya. While in Valmiki's ashram, Sita had given birth to twin sons named Lava and Kush. The boys had been lovingly raised by Valmiki as if they were his own sons. Despite never having seen their father, they had flourished in Valmiki's ashram and had grown into powerful youths. Valmiki had taught them all Vedic knowledge and had also taught them Ram's story, which they became expert in reciting. As the time for Ram's sacrifice approached, Valmiki took both Lav and Kush, as well as hundreds of his other disciples, and went to Ayodhya. He entered the sacrificial arena like the sun surrounded by glowing planets. As soon as Ram saw him, he immediately ordered that he be worshipped and offered a place of honor in the sacrifice. After he had been shown to his quarters, Valmiki said to Lav and Kush, "Tomorrow you should go among the Brahmins here and sing the Ramayana. Go also to Ram's palace and sing this most holy narration where the king will hear it. If Ram calls you before him, then you should recite to him the poem in its entirety. Sing it to the best of your ability and with a pure heart. Do not let your minds be captivated by the opulence and wealth that you see. If Ram should ask whose sons you are, you should tell him that you are two disciples of Valmiki." The two humble and obedient boys replied, "We shall do exactly as you ask, O Lord." The boys were eager to meet Ram. As well as knowing the Ramayana by heart, they had heard their mothers speak many times about Ram. Although they had come to see Valmiki as their father, they knew they were Ram's actual sons. Looking forward to meeting Ram the next day, they lay down happily for sleep by the side of the sage. 2 hours before sunrise, the boys rose and performed their ablutions. After saying their morning prayers, they made their way to the assembly of Brahmins and began to sing the Ramayana. As they sang, they expertly played on lutes, and the music they produced stole the heart and captivated the mind. The Brahmin sages were enthralled, and they repeatedly applauded the boys. "Excellent, well done. We are all amazed by this magnificent poem. Its exquisite music and meter are without compare. It is replete with the 9 sentiments of love, pathos, mirth, heroism, terror, wrath, disgust, wonder, and serenity." The boys' expert singing creates a vivid picture of the story they are telling, and we feel as if we are seeing it actually happen. The sages gazed in wonder at the twins. They both looked like Ram himself and were endowed with many auspicious marks. After making various gifts to the boys, the Brahmins said, "This song composed by Valmiki will be sung by poets throughout all the ages. It is conducive to long life, begets prosperity, invokes all good fortune, and ravishes the ears and mind of the hearer. Go now, dear boys, and recite it for the pleasure of Ram himself." The twins offered their obeisances to the sages and went at once to the palace compound, where they again began to sing. Hearing them from within the palace, Ram immediately ordered that they be brought in. They were offered golden seats within the royal court, and Ram said to them, "O ascetics, we have heard your excellent singing. Please recite your poems here for the pleasure of the Brahmins in this court." as well as my brothers and myself. I think that there is no song its equal, nor indeed singers such as yourselves. Can we put a few chairs out in case someone needs them? And if someone could find out who parked their car parallel here, then they could move it. That would be nice. Ram looked carefully at the two boys. He turned to Lakshman and said, although dressed as ascetics, these two appear like rulers of the earth. Surely they are from royal stock, or even they have some divine origin. Let us listen now as they repeat their wonderful poem. The entire royal assembly sat enchanted while the boys sang. As evening approached and they completed their recitation, Ram said, wonderful, wonderful. O boys, we desire to know who you are and from where you have come. I wish to bestow upon you gold and other gifts in abundance. The boys replied that they were Valmiki's disciples. Remembering the Rishi's instructions, they politely declined Ram's offer of wealth and asked his permission that they be allowed to return to Valmiki. Ram agreed, and the boys departed, leaving the assembly astonished and entranced by what they had heard. After they had gone, Ram dismissed the assembly and sat alone. Hearing his sons recite his life story had made him think of Sita. He longed to see her again. It was ordained by scripture that a king should perform sacrifice with his wife. It had been 12 years since Sita's departure, and he had not seen her since. His heart had often ached with her separation, but he wanted to make absolutely certain that the people had no cause at all to criticize him. Feeling that this had now been achieved, Ram desired to bring Sita to the sacrifice. He summoned Bhadra and said, please have the venerable sage Valmiki informed that I would like him to fetch Sita. Let both he and the queen herself take oath before the assembly that she has always remained pure. I do not want any further obloquy about myself or Sita circulating in the kingdom. Bhadra, surprised and gladdened by Ram's request, replied, it shall be done as you wish, my lord. Envoys left at once and told Valmiki of Ram's desire. The sage immediately made arrangements for Sita to be brought from his hermitage. He told the messengers that she would be present the following day, and they left to inform Ram. The next morning, Ram addressed the royal court. Today, the noble Sita will come to the sacrifice. There she will take oath as to her purity, supported by the great Rishi Valmiki, who has given her shelter these last 12 years. I desire that all the kings and sages hear this testimony. Indeed, let as many people as may desire be present. The assembly cheered Ram, and everyone began to make their way to the sacrificial arena outside the city. All of them longed to see Ram and Sita united again. Although they did not question Ram's judgment, it had broken their hearts when he had sent the queen away. For 12 years they had prayed for this day when she might return. Gradually the vast arena filled up with the royalty and rishis. All the greatest sages in the world came there. Narada, Parvat, Vashishta, Vamdev, Kashyap, Vishwamrita, Durvas, Chaivan, and hundreds more were seen there, representatives of the Rakshasas, as well as the many Vanaras, Gandharvas, and other celestials arrived. In the sky the gods assembled, and Ram took his place in the arena. Valmiki then made his way into the center of the arena, followed by Sita. She was dressed in an ochre-colored sari with her golden earrings glinted in the sunshine as she walked with her head down. Although she thought only of Ram within her heart, out of fear she did not look up at him. She folded her palms in respect and stood silently before her husband. Seeing the queen with downcast expression, the assembly was agitated and gave out various cries. Some were sorrowful, some praised Ram, and still others praised Sita. When everyone finally settled down, Valmiki began to speak. O son of Dasarath, out of fear of criticism, this pious Sita of righteous conduct was left by you near my hermitage. She will now testify to you as to her unfailing purity. I too can swear that this chaste lady is sinless. I do not remember ever having spoken an untruth. I do not remember ever having spoken an untruth. O Ram, know for sure that Sita is entirely free from wicked conduct of any kind. Know also that the two boys who recited the Ramayan to you are certainly both your sons. I have practiced penance for many thousands of years, and if my words are false, then I may not obtain the fruit of that asceticism. Knowing that Sita was innocent, I accepted her into my ashram. She is devoted to you only, O Raghava, and will never sway from you under any circumstances. Ram smiled. It is exactly as you say, O Brahman. I also know Sita to be without blame. This was previously established by even the gods, and thus did I allow her to enter my house. Only due to public censure did I send her away again, even though I never doubted her innocence. Please forgive me. I hereby proclaim my love for the chaste Sita. I also accept these two boys, Lav and Kush, as my sons. Let her now take oath before this assembly and establish her purity once and for all. Sita slowly looked up at her husband, who gazed at her with affection. She glanced around the assembly. As well as many kings and rishis, she saw all classes of celestials standing there, Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, Sadyas, Vishvadevas, Nagas, and numerous others. Above the assembly on his swan carrier sat Brahma, the universal creator. Surrounded by all the principal gods, everyone waited silently for Sita to speak. With her hands folded in front of her face, Sita looked down again and said in a tremulous voice, If I have never even thought about anyone other than Ram, then may the earth goddess grant me shelter. As I worship only Ram in mind, speech, and action, so may the earth give me space. If I have truthfully said that I know only Ram as my Lord, let the earth receive me now. Sita felt that she had become a problem for Ram. Despite having been declared pure by even the truthful gods, the ever-truthful gods, still the doubts remained. It seemed that as long as she was present there, would be those who would find fault with Ram. She would have given up her life the very day she had been sent away to the forest if she had not been pregnant with Ram's sons. Now the boys were old enough to join their father in the city. It was time for her to depart. Ram's reputation could not be sullied by even the slightest doubt, and only her departure could ensure that. As Sita finished speaking, the ground next to her opened up and a celestial throne rose up. That brilliant bejeweled seat was borne on the heads of four great Naga snakes. Sitting on it was Bhumi, the earth goddess, glowing with her divine effulgence. She rose up and held out her hand to Sita with gentle words of welcome. Sita got onto the throne and sat next to Bhumi. Suddenly a great shower of fragrant flowers fell from the sky and covered Sita. The gods loudly praised Sita, and as the kings and rishis looked on in amazement, the throne slowly re-entered the earth. Everyone glorified Sita for her incomparable devotion and chastity to Ram. Ram himself cried out as Sita disappeared into the earth, which again closed as the throne entered within. He leaned on the side of his seat and wept in grief. Wringing his hands in despair, he said, "Upon seeing Sita enter the earth, I am afflicted with a sorrow greater than I have ever known before. How can I tolerate it? How shall I allow Sita to be taken by the earth? When she was stolen by Ravana, I crossed the vast ocean on foot to recover her. I shall again bring her back or go with her for good." Ram looked down at the earth. Becoming angry, he said, "O goddess, you should return Sita to me, or you will feel my wrath. Sita was formerly brought out from your womb. Thus you are my mother-in-law. Therefore, be kind to me and return Sita, or else grant space to me also. I will stay with Sita wherever she has gone, whether it be in heaven or in the nether regions. O goddess, earth goddess, hear my words, or else I shall destroy you with all your mountains and forests." Ram's eyes blazed in anger as he stood up, reaching for the bow by his side. Brahma then spoke from his position from above the sacrifice. "O Ram, Lord of the worlds, do not be aggrieved. Remember your identity as Vishnu. By your own arrangement has this separation from Sita been ordained. The pure and noble daughter of Janak has gone to celestial realms, where you will see her again without doubt. O Lord, listen Now, as your sons finish the narration of Ramayana, they will recite to you all of your future acts, culminating in your return to the spiritual abode, to your spiritual abode. Everything is happening according to your will, O Ram. Do not therefore destroy the world. Ram was pacified by Brahma's speech, and he sat down again. Seeing him peaceful, the gods departed for the heavens. As evening fell, the assembly dispersed, and Ram went sorrowfully back to his palace, taking his two sons with him. The following morning, Ram had Love and Kush sing the remaining portion of the Ramayana, dealing with future events. Sitting amidst his ministers and the court Brahmins, Ram listened as the two boys recited the beautiful poetry they had heard from Valmiki. They briefly described the period of Ram's rule over the earth, a time of unparalleled peace and opulence. Their narration was concluded with a description of how Ram and his brothers would finally leave the world. After Sita's departure from the world, Ram often thought of her. He could not even think of taking another wife, and he had an exquisite gold image of Sita made by expert artisans. That statue sat next to him in the royal court and at sacrifices serving as the queen. A period of 11,000 years passed with Ram ruling the world, assisted by his three brothers. He performed 10,000 great sacrifices, and the earth enjoyed unprecedented opulence. All creatures were happy, and everything functioned in accordance with the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Religion was firmly established, and everyone led pious lives. One day, toward the end of his rule, Ram was visited by an unusual ascetic who glowed with a divine radiance. That Brahmin, having been worshipped by Ram, introduced himself as a messenger of Brahma. He asked for a private audience. Everyone, please move up. Come close. One day, toward the end of his rule, Ram was visited by an unusual ascetic who glowed with a divine radiance. That Brahmin, having been worshipped by Ram, introduced himself as a messenger of Brahma. He asked for a private audience with Ram, saying, O Emperor, no one should hear the words that pass between us. If anyone should interrupt us, then they must be killed by you. Agreeing to this request from the Brahmin, Ram brought him to his personal quarters. He told Lakshman to stand outside and prevent anyone from entering, explaining to him what the ascetic had said. When they were alone, the ascetic said to Ram, O Lord, you should know that I am death. Brahma has asked me to come here and inform you that the time allotted for your earthly pastimes is drawing to a close. You have achieved all that you desired to achieve. Now, if it so pleases you, you may return to your own eternal abode. Death described to Ram some of his former incarnations in the material world, concluding by saying, O Ram, you are the eternal supreme being. You appear in the world to establish religion and destroy the demons. The time set for yourself for this incarnation is now almost over. Be pleased, then, to resume your place as the Lord and protector of the gods. Ram laughingly replied, O destroyer of all, welcome is your visit here. Surely your words fill me with pleasure. It is indeed time for my departure. Please return to Brahma and tell him that I and all my brothers shall leave within a short time. As Ram spoke with death, the great mystic Durvas came to the city. Desiring to see Ram, he was shown into the palace, where he was met by Lakshman. He asked for an audience with Ram, but Lakshman told him Ram was busy at that time. Immediately blazing up with anger, Durvas said, I will not be kept waiting. Go at once, O son of Sumitra, and inform Ram of my presence. Otherwise, know that I shall curse you, your brothers, this territory, and all your descendants. Indeed, my anger is already difficult to contain. Seeing the irascible sage preparing to utter a curse, Lakshman bowed to him and quickly went towards Ram's quarters, thinking, let there be only my death rather than that of my kinsmen. He entered the room where he saw Ram speaking with death. When Ram heard of Durvas, that Durvas was waiting, he immediately came out to greet him. Touching the Rishi's feet, he asked, what shall I do to please you, O Great One? Durvas replied that he had been fasting for 1,000 years and desired to take food that day and break his fast. Kindly bring me cooked foods, O Ram, so that I may end my long penance. Ram and Durva seated comfortably in the palace. Ram had Durva seated comfortably in the palace, and he personally served him with varieties of excellent food. After the sage had left and death had also departed, Lakshman said to Ram, "I must now die, dear brother, for that was the promise you made to death. Punish me in accord with your word to that deity." Remembering his discussion with death, Ram felt shocked. Speechless with grief at the thought of separation from Lakshman, he shed tears and stood gazing at his beloved brother. How could he be killed? Lakshman folded his palms and said, "Do not feel sorrow for me, O gracious one. Time is all-powerful. Bound by our former acts, we must all come under death's sway. O king, keep your promise without fear. Those men who break their promises will go to hell." Ram sat down on his throne, struck with sorrow. He called for his ministers and informed them of what had taken place. Vashishtha then said, "O Ram, all this was foreseen by me. The time for the conclusion of your pastimes has arrived. You should abandon Lakshman now. Do not give up your promise, for if you do, then righteousness in this world will perish. Along with righteousness, all beings will also be destroyed. Therefore, O lion among men, be separated from Lakshman today." Ram looked at Lakshman. "I leave you, O son of Sumitra. Let not virtue suffer. Desertion and slaying are considered equal according to the wise. Therefore, do I abandon you today." Lakshman prostrated himself before Ram with tears in his eyes. He then stood up and left the palace, going directly to the forest. Reaching the banks of the Sarayu, he sat down in meditation, preparing to observe the Praya vow of fasting till death. With his eyes half closed, he suspended his breathing and entered a deep trance. As he sat absorbed in thought of the Supreme, Indra came there, invisible to all, and took him away to the heavens. Thus it appeared to all men that Lakshman had died. Hearing of this, Ram was overcome with grief. He felt he could not remain on earth any longer. Crying out in pain, he said, "I shall confer the kingdom on Bharat. This very day I will follow the path taken by Lakshman." Bharat replied, "How can I think of ruling the world in your absence, O Ram? Along with Shatrughna, we shall all leave together. Bestow the kingdom upon your two sons." Vashishtha agreed with Bharat, "This is proper, O Ram. The time fixed by yourself for your rule has all but ended. Surely you must now depart, taking your brothers who are all part of yourself. Knowing this, the people have become afflicted with sorrow. They are lying prostrate on the ground, mortified at the thought of losing you." Ram was upset to hear the citizens' unhappiness. He called for their chief representatives and said, "What should I do to assuage your grief? I must now leave this world." The citizens begged Ram to take them all with him. "Wherever you are going, O Lord, be it the forest, mountains, oceans, heaven, or hell, we desire to follow you. If it pleases you, let us accompany you." Ram assented, "It shall be so." He then arranged for his sons to be coronated. Lav and Kush could hardly face the prospect of separation from their father. They loudly lamented and fell to the earth when they heard that Ram was departing. Ram gently raised them and said, "Dear sons, you must remain on earth to carry on a righteous rule. Establish your capitals in the northern and southern territories. Always thinking of me, lead the people with justice and compassion. Surely we will be united again in the future." Lav and Kush tightly embraced their father and then left. It's a hard part of the story to hear. Lav and Kush tightly embraced their father and then left Ayodhya for their respective kingdoms, which became known as Kushavati and Sravasti, taking vast amounts of wealth with them. After this, Ram dressed himself in pure white silks and prepared to leave Ayodhya. The next morning, he had Brahmins take his sacred fire from the palace and lead the way toward the forest. With Vashishtha reciting hymns from the Samaveda, Ram went slowly out of the city, seated on a great golden chariot. Those with divine sight could see by his two sides the goddesses Lakshmi and Bhumi. Ahead of him went the personified power of resolution, while around him while all around him were his weapons in human forms. Ram was followed by the Vedas in the form of Brahmins, as well as the goddess Gayatri, and the personified form of Omkar, the divine syllable always meditated upon by great yogis. All the female inhabitants of the palace then followed, accompanied by Bard and Shatrughna. Crowds of ascetics chanting Vedic mantras came at the head of the citizens, who were grouped according to their respective classes. Hundreds of thousands of vanaras, rakshasas and bears also followed behind. Everyone left Ayodhya to go with Ram. Even the animals and birds left the city and went with the procession. No living creature of any kind remained in Ayodhya, and they all made their way westward to the banks of the Sarayu. As they traveled, Ram met one last time with Hanuman to say his farewells. Embracing the monkey, he said, "You have made your decision to remain here on earth, so do not let your words become false." Hanuman replied, "Surely I shall always be in your presence simply by hearing your glories, O Lord. So long as your divine narration circulates in this world, so I shall remain." Ram also asked other vanaras, Mainda and Dvidvid, to stay behind, as well as the king of the bears, Jambavan. They all bowed before Ram, saying, "So be it." Meeting with Bibhishan, Ram said to him, "O best of the Rakshasas, you should stay in the world to rule over your people. As long as the sun and the moon stay in the heavens, so will your rule last. Always worship Vishnu in his form of Jagannath, as Jagannath, the presiding deity of the Ikshvakus." Accepting that order, Vibhishan prostrated himself before Ram and then left for Lanka. Followed by his vast entourage, Ram traveled upriver to the point where it joined the Ganges, then went along the course of that holy river until he reached the foot of the mountain from which where it emanated. At that place, where the path to heaven could be found, millions of divine chariots appeared. All the gods headed by Brahma were visible. Celestial music played by the Gandharvas could be heard, and showers of flowers fell from the skies. It was seen that Vishnu appeared in the sky on the back of Garuda. Within the sight of all, and being praised by the gods, Ram and his two brothers entered Vishnu's form. Every creature present, who were all absorbed in thoughts of Ram, then gave up their mortal bodies and assumed their eternal spiritual forms. The gods saw them rising up on celestial chariots towards Ram's undecaying abode in the spiritual world. It seemed to those celestials that the very city of Ayodhya went with Ram. Astonished by this unprecedented sight, Brahma and the gods left for their own abodes, praising Ram within their hearts. His pastimes were complete. Jai Shri Ram. Thus ends our and completes our vow and our goal to complete the Ramayana by Ram Navami, which we have done over the last couple of weeks. Hare Krishna.